HBK was Chuck's sponsor for 13 years. Chuck was involved with the World Service Office till the mid-1980s, including service as Secretary Treasurer and President at one time. He was the Board of Trustees. Chuck served as the World Service Conference Chair and Vice Chair in the early 1980s. And I'd like to call Chuck C.
I guess I got to turn this on.
Okay. My name's Chuck, and I'm an addict. And first, I want to start by thanking this committee and this area for having me here and for the warm support that I've gotten and the warm atmosphere that's been a part of this get together. I appreciate you people being here and letting me come here. I had never planned on doing the history on anything, and definitely didn't come into Narcotics Anonymous with a plan on being a old timer here or being any time longer than 30 days. I didn't want to have anything to do with any kind of organizations, and definitely did not want to be around any people. And I came to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting in 1970, and I didn't know how fortunate I was to be able to come into Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't know that it was such a small fellowship, and I had no idea that that it was just mainly in California, and that I was so fortunate to be a part of this. I went to my I was hearing other people talk, and it was just bringing up a lot of feelings of the different things that have taken place, and I've looked at some of the pictures and heard some of what other people have said, and I just it brings up a lot of feelings. The first AA meeting that I went to was in Van Nuys, and it was on Sherman Way, and it was right off of 405 there, and it was at a church, and the thing that I remembered about the meeting was that there were addicts that were talking, and they were talking without having anything in their system. And I remember sitting there thinking, well, this guy's not going to talk, and then he'd go ahead and talk. And then I'd say, oh, no, I can tell by looking at this person, they're not going to talk. And then they'd go ahead and talk. And Gene may have been at the first meeting that I went to. I know Bob Barrett was definitely one of the people who were at my first meeting. And in fact, I remember some of what, it's amazing, my memory is not too good, but there's some things that really stick out, and there's some things that I remember. And I remember one of the things that Bob said was he said that once you go through these steps, because my plan was they were talking about the steps, well, I'll get those things through with real quick, and that'll be it. I won't have to worry about them anymore. And he ruined it all for me, because he said, no, once you finish these steps, you continue on doing these for the rest of your life. This is the way we live, is by these steps. And I thought, oh, boy, this is not good. My biggest fear was that I was going to have to talk to Narcotics Anonymous. My biggest fear. I had a couple fears. The biggest fear, one of the biggest fears was I was going to have to talk, and the other one was I was going to have to go to work. And those both happened. I had to start talking, and I had to go to work. I'll jump up to really when I first ran across Jimmy. All the people at that time, most of the people were younger. there was somebody that was, there was one guy that was older than all of us, really, than most of us there. There was one other old guy there, I forget his name, but there was really two only old people that I knew of. And when I say old, I'm really meaning that he was younger than I am now. So he was really a young guy. And it was at the Reprieve House. It was a recovery house, and my the guy who was my sponsor at that time, my first sponsor, took me out to this house, and there was regular meetings that we had there, and there was this old guy, and he was talking, and I remember what he was saying too. What he was saying was, he was talking about how no matter what you're going through, there's always somebody that's going to want to switch places with you. No matter what you're going through, there's always going to be somebody that's going to want to switch places with you. And that was the gist of what he had shared. And I thought, man, this guy, that's good. There was a part of me that I think it felt better. And I remember asking my first sponsor was Jeff Shannon. I know Gene remembers him. Not around anymore. But I remember asking him after the meeting or talking to him. He said, that old guy, that's Jimmy Kennedy. Yeah, he's like a powerful influence around here. So, whoa, okay. And when I look back, I think the fellowship has changed a lot. I think it has changed, and I think it's changed for the good. When I first got here, there was no hugging. You didn't hug. I mean, that was it. You were, you shook each other's hands, and that was as close as you got to anybody. And you may hold hands at the end of the meeting, but that was it. In fact, I thought that was a good thing. That I thought, man, the NA is really close. They hold hands at the end of the meeting. But as far as hugging anybody, that wasn't happening. You know, in fact, if you tried to hug somebody, you may get hit. I had to go away for a while. I came directly out of jail into Narcotics Anonymous, and I was out on bail for the first 8 months of going to NA, and then I had to go away for a while. And when I came back, people were hugging. I said, what's going on here? I remember the first guy that gave me a hug, I kind of had to step back. What's going on here? You know, I couldn't believe that that was starting to happen, but that was a good thing. I always seem to resist the good things, you know, the things that I need. And that was one of the things that I needed. I needed to be closer with other people, to get that hug and that personal text from other people. I needed that. I still need that today. You know, because my nature is to back away. My nature is to be off by myself, and I believe that's also the nature of addiction. Is it wants us off by ourselves. My first sponsor ended up going back out. He got loaded. And I asked Jimmy to be my sponsor. And I didn't know what I was getting myself into when I did that. I didn't know what was the because one of the things that Jimmy believed, and he would tell you, was that if you're grateful, you better show it. Don't talk about it. He'd get very upset if you were talking about being grateful and you weren't showing how grateful you were. So he believed in action. He believed in working. You know, if you wanted to do something, you better start going to work and doing it, or it didn't mean anything. You know, it's very easy for me to talk about being grateful to Narcotics Anonymous, but it's harder to actually do what I'm called on to do, I believe. That if I am grateful, then I really need to show it up. Now, I'd had about 3 years clean, two or 3 years clean, when I asked Jimmy to be my sponsor. And what I tried to do was just to kind of follow what he showed me how to do. And so he was very good on having other people get involved. You know, somebody else was talking about if he was asked to do too much, and somebody else would, he'd ask you to do it. Well, Jimmy was like that. He would, if it was getting beat too much, he'd ask you to hey, why don't you go do this? And that was a good thing, because he got other people involved. A lot of things that, you know, back then, and then Gene talked about a little bit too, is that, hey, you know, we were, in order to make this history happen, the only thing that really happened was we were just happened to be here. You know, I just happened to be at some of the different spots that took place, and wasn't anything that I was really going after, but it just happened. And one of the things that I went to the first conference, and that was and Jimmy was there, and Greg was there, and I know Bill was there, and I didn't even know what was going on. I didn't even know what a conference was. This was the first time that I ran into Bob Stone. Bob was actually the parliamentarian for there. He was going to be the parliamentarian for that. It didn't work out too well at that one, but he was trying. And he went to the conference put together to where they wanted to have it run right. And Jimmy had asked Bob to kind of come up there and be a parliamentarian for the conference so that it would go smoothly. Well, you get a bunch of addicts together that have never had anybody tell them, hey, this is the way that we should do this. Oh, it did not go well. they were not ready for a parliamentarian. Yeah, but Bob was pretty courageous there. He went ahead and he tried to do the best that he could, even though there were some people that wanted to throw him out of there and hey, what's this guy doing here? He's not an addict. What's going on here? But that was the first conference . I got involved in the World Service Office again by not something that I planned on doing. I just happened to be hanging around with Jimmy, and Jimmy took over the office. The office was really being folded because there was really nobody else that wanted to take it over. And Jimmy decided, hey, well, I'm going to take it over. I'll take it over, and I'll try and do the best I can with it. And he took it into his house. And he had it in his house for, 9 or 10 years. He had it in his house, I think, for about 6 years, and then they moved it over to another spot. But when I say they had it in his house, I probably not too many people have been to his house. Some of the people that have talked have been there, but he didn't have, like, a big elaborate house. I mean, he had a little house that he lived in before he came to Narcotics Anonymous up until the day he died. And it was a little house in Sun Valley, and it didn't have hardly any room in it. And and once he got the office going, he added on a little room that was probably, 6 by 9 or somewhere around there, and that was the World Service office. That was the first office, really. I mean, what he would do if you were involved with Jimmy, if you were being sponsored by him, or you wanted to come over and talk to him, or anything, you got involved. And you'd be doing things. You'd be sending things out, and you'd be mainly working. And when I look back, I was thinking about this. When I look back, I think those were those were some of the happiest times in my recovery, were to be involved in doing stuff like that. And it was, and I think the big thing was that I was not in the limelight. I was I didn't like talking, so I wasn't speaking. You know, I was just working. I was working to try and do something better for NA, and there was just a feeling of, yeah, this is the right thing to do. This is the right thing to do. And I miss those times of doing that. Those times of, and now, and other people have talked about this. That's some of the things that have changed here. It's not as personable as it used to be. I think it can be. I think that part of that is my fault. I need to make it more personal. When anything happens, it always comes back to me. It always comes back to me. What am I doing? You know, what am I doing to make this thing better? You know, I'm always ready to put the finger on somebody else and say, hey, they were the ones that did this or did that. And it always comes back to, what did I do? And that's the only thing that I can change, is I can only change myself. And, but getting back to that, we had a lot of good times over at Jimmy's house, and he definitely loved to talk. He loved to talk. And if you start talking to Jimmy, in fact, if you were a newcomer, that's the person you really love to talk to. If he got a hold of you, you were not going to be loaded for a while, because he's talking to you. They used to say that he was. It was harder to get Jimmy off of talking to you than it was to get off of heroin. And that was probably true. You know, I know there were times that he'd be talking to me, I would be thinking, man, when is this guy going to shut up? I want to go. But there was other times that I felt like, man, he knows exactly what's going on with me. And I thought that he was so... I thought that he knew so much about the program that I thought that he knew so much about me that I thought he was reading my mind. I really did. I thought, this guy knows, he knows how to read my mind. I don't know how he's doing it, but he's reading my mind. He wasn't really reading my mind. He just knew what was going on with an addict, and that I was so much like any other addict that was it. And the craziest time that I had in Narcotics Anonymous, Jimmy was there. Craziest time. In fact, there was a lot of crazy times, but the craziest was that I was going through this thing with what was going on in my mind. I was flipped out, just flipped out. I had all these crazy, sick thoughts going on in my head, and I could not get rid of them. You know, I tried to start going through the steps with it, and I went through the first step, and I thought, well, okay, yeah, I'm definitely powerless over what's going on up here. And then I went to the second step, and I thought, man, I am crazy. You know, I need God in my life, and I need God to take care of this for me. And I went ahead, and I prayed, and I asked God, please remove this from me. And I got no relief. And I thought, oh, man, now God's not even working, you know. But God was working. See, I don't know the way God operates. I think I do. Just like I think that I know how you people operate inside your heads. And I think I know what's going on, what you're thinking. And the worst part of it all is I start believing that you know what's going on in my head. And sometimes you do. But there's other times when I'm hurting that you really don't, that I've got to let you know what's going on in order for you to know what's going on. And you need to do the same with me. You need to let me know what's going on in order for me to know. And that's why, that's how this thing works, is we share with each other. And that was the thing that I didn't want to do, is I didn't want to share what was going on in my head with somebody else. And I believe that Jimmy, not even Jimmy, he's well as... as long as he's been around and as spiritual as I thought he was and all that, I think, hey, he's not going to know what's going on with me. He's not going to know. And I believe what was happening is my God was telling me, hey, I'm going to help you, but you're going to need to share this. I thought God wasn't working, but he was really working. And I went ahead and I shared this inventory of what was really going, because I had shared other inventory before that, but this was stuff that was going on since I came to Narcotics Anonymous, not stuff that happened before I came to NA. It's easy to justify the stuff that happened before you came to NA, but when you start having all this stuff happen after you come to NA, then you're thinking, man, I'm weird. This shouldn't be happening. And that's what I felt was, hey, this shouldn't be happening. And I went ahead and shared it with him, and I believe that was probably one of the times I thought, man, this guy knows how to read my mind. Because he knew exactly what was going on with me. And he said, hey, that's just the disease out to get you. That's what's out to get you. And that still holds true today. That stuff that I want to hold on to and not share with you, that's the stuff that's going to get me. I don't know how I got in the position of being on the part of the World Service Office, but other than being through Jimmy, but everything was so small then. And before then, in fact, when I first came to NA, you held different positions. You'd be like a GSR two or three meetings. I mean, that was not unusual at all because the meetings were so small and the fellowship was so small that you'd take on other commitments. Okay, I remember going to one of the meetings and they'd say, well, okay, well, who's going to represent this meeting? Somebody raise their hand, I'll do that. And you'd raise your hand for two or three meetings, so you'd be representing them all. That was where I think we ran into problems with the growth, with this thing. Narcotics Anonymous started to grow. But we didn't have the people to help it grow along. It was growing so fast, and that's what I think we ran into a problem at the office, was that this thing was growing so fast that there wasn't the volunteers to help this thing along. There just weren't the volunteers to help it along. Everybody likes to point the finger, including myself, and say this and this should have been done. But a lot of times, the people that are pointing the finger don't like to do anything. That was what happened when I first came here, is I wanted you to do everything for me. I just want to sit here. I wanted to be out there sitting down while somebody else was up here talking. That's the way I was going to work this NA program. Is I'll just sit there and not do anything. And that's what we do sometimes today. We just want to sit and not do anything. Let somebody else do it. So much easier to let somebody else do it. Then we can criticize them for how they didn't do it properly. I believe that happens a lot. And I do it myself too. I do the same thing. But when I'm doing something, I don't want to be criticized. I don't want to be criticized. And we took a lot of criticism on the different things that took place at that time. And probably still taking criticism for some of the stuff that took place. You know, but I think, like somebody else said, I think it was Sally, hey, we all tried to do the best we could. We all tried to do the best we could. And I think that's what happens. One other thing that I was having a hard time with a guy that I was working with. And I went to Jimmy and I said, man, I can't put up. This guy was my partner. I said, I can't put up with this guy anymore. And he's driving me crazy. And he said something very important to me. He said, maybe he's trying to do the best he can. And that lightened it all up for me. I started thinking, yeah, maybe he is trying to do the best he can. And that's what I don't do a lot of times, is I don't believe that some of the people that I'm involved with are trying to do the best that they can. That some of the people in the fellowship are trying to do the best they can. That I get these resentments going. and I destroy myself. And that's always what happens. And when I get into the resentments, I destroy myself. I destroy myself. Getting back to Jimmy, we were just talking a little bit about this before the meeting. You know, he had this little house that a lot of us visited. Whenever he'd go over there, first thing he'd do is he'd pull out this little cup, put it on the stove, and he'd cook you some coffee, cook some hot water for you. I hope I find that cup someday. Boy, I'd love to see that again. It meant so much that he would that he'd make the time to make you feel welcome. So that'd be the first thing he'd do. Let's have some coffee. Let's sit down and talk. This thing was all black and beat up, and it was only about as big as this around, but there was something special about that. Then he'd sit down and he'd talk. Or he'd talk with that he loved to talk, like I said. And he loved to record it, too. Because he was always thinking about the future. Always thinking about how he could benefit Narcotics Anonymous in the future. And one of the ways that he believed that he could benefit was by having things down on recordings. So if you were going to be talking, and he was going to be recording you, and that's the way it was going to be. I remember seeing him spend many a day of going over to some of the recovery houses, or one of the recovery houses, and he would spend time over there with the new people and going over the steps, and he recorded what was happening there with the steps. And that was his main emphasis, was he was always concerned with the newcomer and how he could help the newcomer. You know, was he perfect? No, he definitely was not perfect. None of us are. He did things the way that he thought that they should be redone in order to help the newcomer at that time. You know, and sometimes I remember being at a meeting with him one time, and he didn't write in the middle of when somebody was talking, he just started talking and saying, no, it's not like that. And that's the kind of guy he was. But you knew exactly where you stood with him. You know, and yeah, if you crossed him, yeah, you may not be able to talk to him for quite a while. Or you may not ever be able to talk to him again if you thought you crossed him too much. But that was where he was. You know, and he felt at the time that he was doing the right thing. And he got mad at me a few times, and he'd get upset at some of the different things that weren't coming down right at the World Service Office, that maybe you weren't packing the materials right, or you came in and you slumped off doing something there. But he was always thinking of what was best for the fellowship, and if you weren't doing things right, then that wasn't best for the fellowship, then you shouldn't be doing it. You know, you should try and do it differently. So there was a lot of controversy and a lot of things that were happening back around the time of when the book was coming out and before the book came out. And like I said, I think the majority of what I see is what happened was there was not enough help. There was not enough help, and the office took the heat for it. And the office did need more help, and they did need they definitely did need somebody in there that was getting paid, because Jimmy wasn't getting paid. He wasn't getting paid. He did all this for free. You know, for many years he took like $50 a month was what it was allotted for storage. Now, $50 a month is nothing. And then at the end there was raised to $200 a month. That was it. That was what was taking place with as far as his pay. And he wasn't looking for any more money. He wasn't looking for anything like that. The main thing that he wanted to do was to carry the message out there. So he was trying to do the best he could to get the message out. And I was involved with that when the book was turned over to the World Service Office to be printed. And it was a very, very trying time then. Because like Sally was saying, the book was turned over and Jimmy wanted to keep his loyalties to the people who were already printing literature. And the office, we felt that the office, that this printer would be able to do it. And the printer turned out to be one of us that was still active. And I remember going over there with some of the other board members and running into this guy that had burnt us. And we'd all had our hopes on the book being out. It was like kind of like dealing with the connection. I mean, it was. He kept telling us, "Well, tomorrow, it's going to be all right. We're going to have it tomorrow." And of course, after a while, we finally had to check up and went over there, and we had been burnt. And I'm not really a physical guy. I don't like fighting and all that, but that was the only time that I felt like, man, I need to deck this guy. But this guy was just off into the disease, and we got burnt. We got burnt. You know, but again, that wasn't anything that anybody had planned, and I don't think anybody really made a mistake there other than putting some trust in somebody. And it was trusted that somebody had already placed in these people before that had done a good job. You know, so, I think we've all tried to do the best we can. You know, I think the thing that really took off, and when I saw the office that, I made some notes here, but when I saw the office, I took notes because I thought I was going to forget some of this stuff, and I probably will forget a lot of this stuff, but that was one of the things that Jimmy used to do. He used to take all these notes, and when they'd ask him to go talk and stuff, he'd write down all these different things that he was going to say, and he had it all down, and then he'd leave the house, and he'd say, "I forgot the notes." He never did need the notes. I mean, he had all that stuff, but he was always doing that. And we'd spend 10 or 15 minutes looking for the notes where he put them, and we'd never be able to find them. Because if you went over to his house, he had all this stuff all over the house. It was just packed full of stuff. He never threw anything away. He kept everything that had to do with Narcotics Anonymous. He kept it in his house. He had it somewhere. The problem was you wouldn't be able to find it. We had the book that came out, and to me that's, we needed that book. We needed that book. And when it came out, it was a very big thing. And it was, there was a lot of controversy on it, like it was said, a couple of traditions there, and what was going on with the book, and how it was done, and all that. But that's when things started to happen. Because that's when people started letting up on their money that we should have been getting earlier before that. And that's when the fellowship, I believe, started to grow. Is because we had a book. We had our own book. Now we can pay more money for people to work in our offices. We can have a higher help than we needed. And what happened was that after all of this time that Jimmy had that had put into this, it got too big too quick. This is my opinion. It got too big so quick that they felt that they needed to have a hired hand in there. They needed to have somebody that was paid. And I think I think the things worked out the way they were supposed to work out. But I think the way it was done was not done correctly. It was not done right. And I'm not going to get off into all of that, but I have to take my spot here. You know, I was involved in that thing at that time, and I remember them at the conference voting that they needed to have a hired manager, and the manager should be Bob Stone, and that Jimmy was going to be like an honorary member. That was the way it was supposed to be. He was still, he wasn't going to be kicked out of the office, but he was not going to be the manager anymore. He would be, that they were going to lighten the load for him. Of course, that's, I don't think was the real intent there, but that's the way it was came across at the conference. And I was the president of the World Service Office at that time. So really wasn't my job to go back and tell Jimmy that what was happening there, but as a friend, it was my job to do that. And I tried to sugarcoat it when I went back to tell him. And that wasn't really the right thing to do. And if there's any way that I ever felt that I hurt Jimmy, that was the way that I felt that I hurt him. Because I didn't know the words, I didn't know what to tell him. What do you do? What do you say to somebody that's being replaced like that? So I didn't know what the words to say to him. And I've always felt bad for the way that came down. And I think that the fellowship had to take responsibility for that too. That we had a plan at that time on how that Jimmy should be replaced. But we didn't have a plan on how that should happen or who should tell him or how it should take place. The only thing I think we were thinking about, fellowship was thinking about at that time, was that there needed to be somebody else in there. And that was wrong. Like I said, Jimmy loved to talk. Up until the day he died, that's the thing that he was doing, was talking. I still have a tape at home of him and Pepe talking in the hospital. Now he's got cancer. What's he want to talk? He didn't want to get into, wasn't getting into, hey, what are they going to do for my cancer or anything like that. The thing he was getting into was about Narcotics Anonymous. And that was his talk with Pepe, was about Narcotics Anonymous. How can he keep this thing going? You know, we've talked about a vision for Narcotics Anonymous. One of the visions that I think that Jimmy had for Narcotics Anonymous is that this thing never dies. That it never dies. One of the things that he had done, and I'm not quite sure what year it's going to be dug out, but he had a time capsule that was supposed to be dug up in 2010 or 2020, somewhere around there. But that was his thinking was always ahead of how can he benefit the fellowship. So his thinking was that if anything happens where this whole thing gets blown up, this world ends or whatever, and it's restarted, that the struggles that happened in Narcotics Anonymous or getting Narcotics Anonymous started will happen rapidly. That it's in this time capsule on how to do this thing. So he wanted to make sure that it was going to keep alive. I think there's a lot of other people that are quite instrumental in Narcotics Anonymous. Quite instrumental. I think Jimmy was the one that took the ball and ran with it, and then he's handed it to a lot of other people. And I think there's a lot of people that are instrumental in this thing staying alive. And one of them is Bob Barrett. Bob was around when I first came around, and if wherever you go, Bob would be there. He would be there. He was at the, like I said, the first meeting that I went to, he was at the first meeting that I ever talked at. Bob was there. I remember, like I said, I had a hard time talking. And I went to the meeting, it was Yuckengauer was the meeting I went to, and I remember it was Ed Mentner was the leader, and Bob Bear was there, and there was just a... And I hadn't talked. I believe this was like the beginning of my recovery. This is when I feel like I became a part of Narcotics Anonymous. Ed called on me and he said, Chuck, do you have anything to share? And I had learned that if you don't want to share Narcotics Anonymous, you just say pass. And I said, my name's Chuck and I'm an addict and I pass. Then he came around again and he said, Chuck, are you sure you don't have anything to share? And he caught me off guard. And I said, yeah, my name's Chuck, I'm an addict, and I feel inferior. And that was exactly the way that I felt, is I felt inferior. And there's times where I still feel inferior today. But Narcotics Anonymous has made it to where I don't feel inferior all the time. That I've got a way to go. And that's what the people before me have made it possible for me to have a way to go. Somebody was talking about Gene and talking about backpacking, I think maybe it was Bill. And that was the first thing that I heard Gene talk about. I thought, man, that sounds all right, to go backpacking. You know, to be able to do that. You know, I've been clean 33 years now, and I still haven't gone backpacking, but it sounded good. But I have done a lot of other things. And I think that's what Narcotics Anonymous does, is it opens up a whole new life of things that I knew that I would never want to experience or experience. And that's what has to happen, is we have to open up our minds. To let these experiences happen, to experience new things. Whenever I shut down and think that I don't want to do this because it may be too scary or it may be too tough for me to do, then I shut off my God because he's trying to express himself through me to help me, to carry me on. And then I don't grow any further. Like the first time I used to plan out these different things to say and how I wanted to talk and to sound, and I'd listen to other people and they'd be so profound in the different things that they would say that I'd try and copy them. And it always came out all messed up. And it doesn't really matter what I say. It really doesn't. The thing that matters is what am I doing? What do I do when I leave here? What do I do at home? When you're not looking, that's the important thing. What do I do when you're not looking? And that's what I want to try and do. And one of the things I also want to emulate Jimmy. Because one of the things that he did was when you weren't looking, he was doing the same thing as when you were looking. He was doing the same thing as when you were looking. He did nothing differently, I believe. This program, I believe, takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of courage. You know, it's not. Jimmy said that at the 20th anniversary. I was also privileged to be at that event. I had 3 years clean then. It was probably a group about this size. That was the 20th anniversary of NA. And one of the people that, that did speak, and if you've heard the tape, it was Jack Whaley, and he was quite a character. I remember, actually I remember talking to Bill and saying, man, that guy really scares me. Because boy, if you were new, you were actually scared to probably leave Narcotics Anonymous because if you were coming back, he was definitely going to be talking bad about you. And he was going to be talking bad about you if you were even here. But I believe also that he had a warm heart. He had a warm heart. And his, I think it takes all of us in Narcotics Anonymous to make this thing up. It takes special people like Jimmy Kennan. It takes special people like Jack Whaley, like Bob Barrett, Gene, Bill, all the different, Sylvia, all the different people, and all of you, all of us together, we've all got a part to play here. I used to get hard on myself because I was back, and people talked about this, back before recovery houses, you know, the only place to go was somebody else's house. That was the thing. Well, I had a wife that wasn't on the program, and I had a small boy. And I wanted to bring other people into my house. And I tried to do that. I ran into a lot of resistance from my wife. She was scared to death of having that happen. So I still feel today the same way that I felt back then, and that I had decided what I had to do was the main thing that I had to do was I had to carry my load. I had to carry my load. No matter how I did it, I had to do that. That there was other ways of me doing things. And I think that's what happens here. We've all got some different specialties. And when you go out, we lose that specialty that you have. God has a plan for each one of us that are here. We have to stick around and find out what that plan is. And the big thing that we have to do is we have to follow through with that plan. You know, that I was all in with this because I know my time is up, but it was a very heavy event for me, the 50th. And the heaviest part for me was, really, one of the things that Gene had done that reminded me that, no, the most important person is us helping somebody else that's in need. He has pictures of that, of what happened there, and taking this guy and that was just off the streets. And I remember we were going up, up on the stage there, because we were going to be big shots and be on stage. And I remember thinking, well, trying to tell Gene, well, we should leave this fella down here with some other friends. And Gene sort of saying, no, I think we should take him with us. I don't know if that was the, I don't know if I would have wanted to be, there was 20,000 people there, so I don't know if I would have wanted to be my first day out in front of 20,000 people with bright lights on me, but the powerful thing that it brought home to me is, no, that's what this thing is all about. That's what we need to do, is help each other. It's not always just the newcomer. Sometimes it's the old-timers that need help. We're all in the same boat. We're all here in this thing together. And we may have our differences. We may not see things the same. But I believe that we're all our goal is all always the same. I know that there's people that I have a difference with in this room. But I know for sure that if it came down to us helping somebody else, that we would be united. And that's the way I believe that God wants us to be. No matter what our differences are, we need to be united helping each other. Thank you. Something that I know nothing about there, and I don't remember that happening. So I got a difference of opinion.
Okay. Okay. But do we know what happened to Leslie? You had described how Jimmy made all the recordings of the conversations he had, and did he pass those on?
Well, when he died, all that was left with Betty, and Betty had it for many years, and then a lot of it was turned over to the office.
Okay,
oh, you're talking about all the recordings and all the different NA stuff that he had. Yeah, just about all that was turned over to the office.
I'm growing on that. I got clean. I grew up a lot around people that were heavily involved in service, and we hear a lot of the legends and tales, urban legends. For a long time, we stopped to find out what's real addiction, as we see right now. responsibility and what's sufficient. Another question that I would pose would be, who are they? Was it the World Service Conference? Was it the fellowship at large? Or was it the Board of Trustees that made that decision? And I hear, this is history. And sometimes history is not a pleasant topic to talk about. It's no different than a foreskill. So you got to look at what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly in order to find truth. And I'm still listening real hard to hear the common threads, but I hear a lot of they. And I kind of like to know who they are. Did the fellowship as a whole send a mandate by way of a conference vote? Was it they, the trustees? Was it they, the WSO office? Was it they, two people, or was it they, one person? There's a lot of questions for me around who they are. Who approved the book? Who approved the changes? Well, they did. And I hear the fellowship. Well, is the fellowship the conference? Or is the fellowship the office? Or is the fellowship at large where everybody has a voice? Thank you.
That was the question? Conference, as far as what happened with Jimmy, the conference was the one that voted to have a paid manager put into the office. Like I said, there was no afterthought as to how this should be taking place.
Thank you, the greatest gift that I got was from Bo, because Bo taught me how to write. Bo is, as far as I'm concerned, the scribe of Narcotics Anonymous. And if y'all don't know that, you should know that. He says, well, no, it's Narcotics Anonymous. No, Bo is the scribe for Narcotics Anonymous. It's how I always see him. It's how I think of him. It's what I believe to be true about him. I had a few days clean, and he said, well, you need to start writing.